We're holding on page 52 in Sota, the first line of the wide lines, a few lines into Os Nun Zayin. We started learning yesterday, since we're talking about the dust that's used for the Sota water, we said that the fact that we use that is a reward for the fact that Avraham Avinu said, Vanuhi off of Afer, that and the ashes of the Parda Aduma. Like we talked about yesterday, there's the idea that if not for that, Hashem could have made, for example, Maharsha explains Hashem could have made that the methods that you have to use for becoming Tahor from Tumas Mess and the methods that you use to make a woman mutter to her husband again should be much harder to find substances, and Hashem instead gives us these relatively easy things. And we talked about also yesterday the idea that the Rebbe says in a sifra that both of those involve Hashem or the Kohen respectively setting aside his own agenda, and that's what Avraham did with his words Vanosi off of Efer. So the Gemara continues in this vein, Dorash Rava, that Rava gave a drasha. In the reward for the fact that Avraham, after the war with the four kings, so he had captured all of these spoils from the defeated, he and Eliezer and the 318 men had defeated the four kings over there, and they took all the spoils of Sodom, and then the king of Sodom comes and tells Avraham, Ten li anefesh v'rechush kach loch, you can keep all of the wealth for yourself, just give me back the people. But Avraham says, no, I'm not taking even a thread or shoelace. Rashi points out, Shivriach Atzmi Minat Gezel, he wanted to keep himself far away from any trace of Gezel. Eitz Yosef points out from other Mefarshim that really, I mean, it's a little hard to say that it was with Gezel because it belongs fair and square to him. The halacha is he saved it. There's halacha. You save something from a marauding army like that, where normally there's no way of getting it back, and the owner is on the yash, then it's not considered Gezel. It fully belongs to you. So rather, the idea is that he's Makadish same Shemayim by saying, and he says as Rashi as the pasuk set mentions over there, and as Rashi explains over there, I don't want you, the king of Sodom, to think that I made Avraham wealthy. Anyway, so in the style for him saying that, in Michut v'Adzreich now, Zochu bon of the Shtei Mitzvahs. For that, his children were Zochu. The two mitzvahs also having to do with a thread and a shoelace, respectively. Luritzua, with a thread and a strap, respectively. Luritzua shol tefillin, or the tchelas shol tzitzis. We have the straps of the tefillin, and we have the tchelas of the tzitzis. Meaning, again, the idea is, these mitzvahs would have existed independently of that. But, for example, Maharsha explains in Cholin, without that, you could have, fine, we have to put on tefillin, but there wouldn't necessarily be the mitzvah of having them held in place with straps. There could have been some other arrangement to hold them in place. And the same thing, as far as tzitzis, yes, there had to be tzitzis, but they didn't necessarily have to include the thread of tchelas. So those Hashem gave the Jewish people as a reward for the way that Avraham spoke. So we have to figure out, again, like we said with the dust and with the ashes, there has to be some kind of, when we're saying that it's a reward, it's not just a mitzvah itself. Mitzvah slav lahonis nitnu, there has to be some kind of actual hana that we get from the mitzvah. So we have to figure out, b'shlemer ritzua shel tefillin, we understand what the benefit is in this world that we get from the straps of the tefillin, d'chtiv, as the pasuk says, "V'ro kol amei ha'aretz," all the nations of the world will see "Kishem Hashem nikra alecha," that the name of Hashem is called on you. "V'yoru mimecha," and they will fear you. "V'tanya," and we learn in a brayser, "Rabbi Eliezer Agadol Eimer Elu Tefillin Shabarosh." This refers to the tefillin on the head. The goyim see us wearing that, and it causes the fear of Hashem, and it causes the fear. It causes them to fear us and to fear Hashem. So the fact that we have the straps of the tefillin, and in particular the shorosh, has the kesher shol dalet on it, so that brings about that good effect of yoru mimecha. So we have an actual tangible benefit in this world from the tefillin and from the straps that hold them in place. This is why, and of course, you know, beginning in the weeks before the 6-day war, the Rebbe started pushing the tefillin on the basis of that. So elachot shel tchelas ma'ihi. What exactly is the hana that we get from having threads of tchelas in our tzitzis? So the answer is the Tanya. The benefit that we have from this is as follows. Why is tchelas different than all other dyes that davka we have to use it for tzitzis? No, not even among blues themselves. The Gemara mentions elsewhere you can't use color ilan, indigo, which is a color, which is a dye very similar in color to tchelas, but it's not exactly the same thing. Why is it that you have to davka use tchelas? And the point is, now here it's kind of the opposite of the thing with the dust and the ashes that we said before. Tchelus is actually very hard to come by, which is why for hundreds of years you didn't have it, and even now that you have the various opinions about what Tchelus is, they're not universally agreed to. But either way, they are very difficult to get out of the respective kinds of creatures that they say that they come from. So Ion Yaakov points out, we find by Korbanos, for example, even though you have 10 kinds of kosher animals, only the three domesticated ones are kosher for Korbanos, because Hashem doesn't want to be Matsriachas to go and hunt wild animals for Korbanos. So the same thing over here, why adapt a Tchelus that comes from the Schilozen, which is very hard to come by? So the reason is, because Tchelus is similar in color to the sea, the yam dome l'rakia, and in turn the sea resembles the color of the sky, v'rakia dome l'kisei ha'kavod, and the sky in turn resembles the color of the kisei ha'kavod. So this way, in other words, every time a person is mekayim mitzvah tzitzis with tchelus in them, then it's as if he's welcoming the shechinah. This is how Rashi explains it over here. We have a parallel Gemara in Chulin where it brings this point also, first in connection with Kisei Adam, and then it mentions these various drushas over there as well. And there Rashi points out the other way around. It also means that every time that Hashem looks at his Kisei HaKavod, then so to speak, he's moved to remember us who wear tzitzis with tchelas, and therefore to have rachmanos on us. So therefore also, so it's a hanah that we have. Now, Rashi explains over here, why don't we just say straight out, Tchelus is Dome L'Kisei HaKavod. Why go through the intermediate steps? So Rashi explains because they're not exactly alike in color. Tchelus is not exactly the color of the Kisei HaKavod. It's closer to the color of the sea. And then in turn, we can see the sea somewhat fairly well resembles in color the color of the sky and so forth. So we have now the Pasuk does tell us that the sky and the Kisei HaKavod are the same color, because you have by the sky Kemaisa Livnas HaSapir by Matan Torah, and by the Kisei HaKavod is also this way Chesko describes it, Kemare Evan Sapir. So we see that they're alike in color, but that's the only one that we actually find in the Pesukim. We never find the Pesukim mentioning, for example, that the sea and the sky are the same color, and they're not, but they're similar enough in color that one of them evokes the other. Tosfos actually brings from a different source, from a medrash that puts grass somewhere in between over there as well. Tchelus is similar to the sea, which in turn is similar to the color of grass, which in turn is similar to the color of the sky.
What was the question in the answer?
The question is basically, why do we have to say Tchelus is like the sea, which in turn is like, which in turn is like the sky, which in turn is like the Kisei HaKavod? Why not just say straight out, Tchelus is like the Kisei HaKavod? And the reason is because they're not that close in color, but one is a shade away from the other one, and therefore by putting it together like that, you eventually arrive at the color of the Kisei HaKavod. But the point is, that way, when you see the Tchelus and your tzitzis, it should evoke that chain of associations that reaches to the Kisei HaKavod, and therefore, as it actually says, therefore, a person now has the advantage that it's as if he's Mekabel Pnei Shechinah. And vice versa, as Rashi says in the Cholin, that every time Hashem sees his own Kisei HaKavod, then he remembers us and realizes how much we put into our mitzvahs, including Tchelus, which, like we said, is very hard to come by and very expensive. There is also, by the way, I once saw a vote on it, that it's also the reason why the Gemara mentions this whole chain is because, like this was saying, when you have Tchelus. So what about, for example, we don't have Tchelus? So the idea is, still, every time you see the sea, every time you see the grass, every time you see the sky, those should also set up in your mind a chain of associations that leads to the Eidus Kisei HaKavod. So like this, if we only said Tchelus is Dome L'Kisei HaKavod, then we who don't have Tchelus would miss out on that. But like this, in other words, every various thing that a person sees in his day-to-day existence, the average person sees a lawn of grass, okay, so grass, the person goes and then crosses over into Manhattan and crosses over the East River, okay, so there's water there, big deal, but like this, it's meant to actually set up a certain association in a person's mind. Anyway, so that's the advantage that a person gets from wearing tchelus. So shenemar, and then we see that the sky is similar to the Kisei HaKavod. That's actually, so I mentioned Rashi, actually, the Gemara itself says it over here. So Rakia Dermel Kisei HaKavod, shenemar, by Yiruas Elokei Yisrael, by Matan Torah, they went up to Har Sinai and they saw the vision of Hashem, the Sachas Raglov, and under his feet, so to speak, Kemaisa Livnas HaSapir, was a making of like brickwork made out of sapphire, as Rashi mentions on the post. Over there, like there were bricks there during the time that the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, because Imer Enichi B'tzara, U'cha'etzim HaShemayim L'Torah, and like the actual heavens as far as the purity of the sight over there, U'chtiv, and then Yechezkel describes the Kisei HaKavod, Kamara Evan Sapu, Dumus Kisei, that he sees it looking like sapphire, the image of a throne. So we see that the Rakia and the Kisei HaKavod are both compared to sapphire. But yeah, the other thing, again, as Rashi says, are not identical in color, but they're close enough that one can evoke the other one. Okay. So we're saying that all of that came as a reward for Avraham saying in Michot Vad Tzlech now and staying away from Gezel and making Kiddush Hashem and stuff. Okay. Hoya Noto Perak Shlishi. So it continues talking about the process with the Soita. So eventually we get to the point where now the Kohen has written the Megillah and dissolved the ink into the water and so on and so forth. And now we finally come to the point where he's giving her the drink. So the Mishnah describes, Einam aspekas, if she's guilty, Einam aspekas lishtos, before she even has a chance to finish drinking, ad shepaneha mavikos, her face turns pale, ve'eneha biltos, and her eyes start sticking out, ve'himismala gidim, and she becomes, it makes her, she looks like she's full of veins. Rashi describes that the veins in her cheeks start swelling up, so it makes it look like she's covered, like she's covered all over with veins. Rashi brings also from Sifri that also on the rest of her skin also, whatever her skin is visible at that time, starts looking like all of a sudden like as if there are rods underneath it. All of her the word gidim in Gemara terminology means is basically used for anything long and skinny in the body. So it includes nerves and veins and blood vessels and it's also used of the male aver and tendons and sinews and so on and so forth. So the point is all these things start sticking out like as if the flesh around them has shriveled up and now they're sticking out. Like you see, you look, for example, an old person's hands and you see the veins and tendons and whatnot sticking out. So now it starts looking like that by her as well. Eon Yaakov points out, by the way, you know, you have we say in the Gemara in Nida that Shloisha Shutfen Yeshva Adam, a person has the creation of a person requires three partners, a mother, a father, and Hashem. And the Gemara describes over there what each one contributes to the baby. The father contributes, among other things, the gidim. Therefore, now the gidim starts sticking out. The mother contributes, among other things, the pupil of the eye, which is what the person sees with. You see through the pupil of your eye. Therefore, that starts sticking out. And Hashem gives the person the radiance of a face, the fact that his face looks like a human face. So therefore, her face starts turning pale. So all three, because she was guilty, because she misused the body that was created by those three partners, therefore there's an effect on all three of those areas, says Ian Yaakov. We also learned in the first Perek, it was one of the Midah Keneged Midah things, she had put on makeup to attract the guy that she's Mizana with, and now therefore, instead her face turns pale. Vehem Omim, and everybody would start yelling out, Hotzi'uha, Hotzi'uha, take her out, take her out. Remember, she's standing all this time in Shar Nikanor at the edge of the Ezras Noshim, right before the Azara. She lets a Tameh as Azara, so she doesn't make the Azara Tameh. Rashi, what Azara? She's not in the actual Azara, but Rashi describes it means the Nikanor gate itself, or Ezras Noshim. She's going to have to go out through that. So we want her out as fast as possible. We'll see in the Gemara soon what exactly is the problem. In what way is she going to be? Is she potentially going to be metameh? And the idea is, by the way, Ion Yaakov points out, you know, up until her face starts turning pale, we don't know, after all, the whole point of the Mei Sota is we don't know whether she's guilty or not. So up until that point, we're not in such a hurry. But, and even as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, she can have a schus, and we'll discuss over the next few pages, Bez Hashem, what kind of schus she can have that can suspend her punishment. So that being the case, even if she is guilty, if she drinks the Mei Sota, she may not die very soon. So that she may be, her punishment may be suspended, we're going to say, for several months, or a year, 2 years, etc. So therefore, they're not in such a rush to get her out of there. But once they see her face is turning pale, that shows everything is going to start happening very soon. Therefore, we have to get her out of there before she's metame in the place. If she became scared, then that would have been all the time before that. By the time now that she actually drank, then no, her face turning pale, and the rest of that is not from being afraid. It's, yeah. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continues, Im yeshla schus hoisa toila la. Now, suppose this woman, even though she was mizana, let's say she has a schus, as we'll see eventually in the Gemara, what kind of schus we're talking about, hoisa toila la, then it would suspend her punishment. She's not gonna die from the mei soita right away. Yes, schus toila shana achas. Sometimes you can have a schus that suspends her punishment for 1 year. The yesh schus toila shtei shanim, sometimes 2 years. The yesh schus toila shalosh shanim, and sometimes 3 years. The Gemara is going to bring other opinions about it. The Yerushalmi, interestingly, brings that we actually have examples in Tanakh. We have clear examples in Tanakh of people's punishment being suspended for a year, 2 years, and 3 years, respectively. A year, we're going to have an all Gemara later. We're going to have that Nebuchadnezzar, after he had a dream that Daniel interpreted for him, that he's going to go crazy and become like an animal. Daniel tells him, do tzedakah, and that'll suspend your punishment. And sure enough, it postponed his punishment for a year. So there we see that a person's punishment can be postponed for a year because of mice and tovim. 2 years, the Yerushalmi says, you have the example of Amnon. So you have the story in Sefer Shmuel where Amnon violates his half-sister Tamar, and we've talked about before that Tamar is not considered related to Amnon Lahalachav, either because she's the daughter of Yifas Torah, and either her father is David, but she was conceived while her mother was still a goyka, or Bechlal, her father, or maybe even somebody else. Be that as it may, she grew up in the same household as Amnon, but she's not actually considered his sister, Lahalacha, but he has a taiva for her, and he eventually lures her into his quarters and violates her. Anyway, so the Pasuk says, after that, the Pasuk says, now Avshalom, it says, who was Tamar's full brother, Tamar's biological brother, he held it very much against Amnon for doing that, of course. He's biding his time, waiting until he has the chance to strike, and eventually the Pasuk says, 2 years later, Avshalom has a festival in honor of shearing his sheep, and to make a long story short, he invites Amnon there and then kills him during the thing. But he's 2 years, his punishment was postponed. Why? The Medrash, the Yerushalmi says, during those 2 years, Amnon was learning Torah. So therefore, so that suspended his punishment for 2 years.
For 1 year?
So by Nebuchadnezzar, we see it was suspended for 1 year, the fact that he gave tzedakah. By Amnon, he was learning Torah, and that postponed his punishment for 2 years. As far as three, the Yerushalmi says you have the example of Achav. You have the whole story with Achav and Novos, where they flame Novos, Berach Novos of the King of Melech. They claim that he had cursed Hashem and the king, and therefore they made him Chayiv Misa, and Achav confiscated his vineyard, and then Eliyahu Novi comes with a very harsh nevuah to Achav. Your whole family is going to be wiped out for that, and so on and so forth. And then what happens is, the Pasuk described, Achav did a degree of tshuva. The Pasuk says that he was fasting and putting on sackcloth and so forth. The Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin mentions that also, for example, his relative was Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, who was a tzaddik. The two families by that time had intermarried with each other. So every day he would call over Yehoshaphat Yehoshaphat in to give him petch. So he's doing a certain degree of tshuva. And therefore, the Eibishter says to Eliyahu, you know what? Therefore, I'm going to postpone his punishment. Ultimately, the destruction of his family and his dynasty is not going to be in his own time, but in the times of his son. Meanwhile, then the Pasuk says 3 years passed, and then there was a war with Aram and then Achav was killed in that battle. So we see that his punishment was postponed for 3 years because of that tshuva that he did.
Who would get
it? Yehoshaphat would come every day to give Achav petch. To give him Malchus.
Achav
accepted on himself. He realized that with the whole thing with Novos, he had gone too far. So it wasn't a complete tshuva, obviously. He still had his Avodah Zarah. He still had, you know, it's not like he went and then looked for Novos's, not like went and looked for Novos's nearest relatives to give the vineyard back to them, but still it was a degree of tshuva. You know, we have in the slichas of Tzum Gedalia, we have one of the slichas over there where we go through a number of examples, Hodesa Derech Tshuva, the slicha begins, we go through a number of examples in Jewish history where we have people who did tshuva and the Eibishter gave them a break. And one of them is Achav, Paras Gidras Olam Ben Omri HaRosha. We talk about over there about this wicked son of Omri burst through all the boundaries of what a Yid should do, and nevertheless he did a shtichel tshuva and the Eibishter gave him a break for a while. So, and the Yerushalmi is saying, based on the Pasuk, that break was full 3 years until he was killed in battle.
Why is that?
Because he did tshuva, because he did a certain degree of tshuva. The Malbim actually points out in the Pesukim over there, you have a nuance. He says that the Eibishter says to Achav, that says to Eliyahu, Haro'isa, have you seen ki nichna Achav milafonai? Have you seen that Achav has humbled himself before me? Yana shem nichna Achav miponai, because he humbled himself before me, therefore I won't bring this doom on his family in his lifetime. The Malbim makes an interesting point over there. There's a difference between milafonai and miponai. Milafonai would mean a sincere tshuva. Miponai means more like a superficial tshuva. So the Eibishter is saying to Eliyahu, you know, you look at it and you think that Achav really has turned over a new leaf. I want to tell you something. It's not really all that much a tshuva. Nevertheless, because at least he's sort of going through the motions, therefore I'm willing to give him a break. So, right here.
In other words, postponed, but a real
tshuva. Postponed, but a real tshuva would have canceled things altogether, yeah. Anyway, going back to the mission over here. So we're saying, again, that she...
Is not really
so that's the
is
so I'd have to look at the pasuk. I don't remember one. First it says one expression, then the other. And yeah, there's the I don't remember which is which now, but whatever. One of them means superficially, and the other one means sincerely. Yeah. Anyway. So anyway, the point is, returning to this Isha Soita, so again, even though she's guilty of Znus, nevertheless, if she has a schus, then we're saying it can suspend her punishment for a certain period of time. And the Gemara is going to explain the schus we're talking about in this connection is the schus of Torah. So the Gemara, so the Mishnah continues, Mikan Omer Ben Azai, based on this, Ben Azai says, Chayav Adam L'Lamedes Bitei Torah, a man is obligated to teach his daughter Torah. She in Tishte, if it should happen later in her life, that she ends up being in this position of a sota and having to drink the water, and she gets through it alive, Teda, then she'll know, Shas Chus Torah Law, that the Chus suspended her punishment, meaning that she'll be able to learn from the Parashas Soita that her punishment can be suspended for a period of time.
Help her to do tshuva.
Well, actually, so that's a good point. Actually, that might make her think that she can get away with it. Eventually, Gemara is going to say, eventually she does get what's coming to her. Eventually she does get the death of the Soita anyway. It just gets postponed for a while. On the other hand, but so H. Yosef points out that is true. On the other hand, the fact is, if she didn't learn this point that the schus could be toila for her, and she sees she gets out of it unscathed, and she knows herself that she was mizana, then she's going to start being motzi laz on the May searcher. She's going to say, it doesn't work, and all of them convince all her friends that she has not, they have nothing to worry about. Whereas at least if she's learned this point, that this point from the dinim of the soita, that schus can suspend her punishment, then she'll know to herself, you know what, let's not fool around over here. The fact of the matter is that I know it's still going to be coming to me. It's just been suspended for a while. But yeah, eventually it is going to happen anyway, so it's not like she thinks she's completely going to get away with it. If she, at any point, if she says Tmei Ani, then that's it. The whole thing is over, and her husband divorces her, and she forfeits the ksuba, and she doesn't have to drink the water. Yeah, that's why we learned yesterday, for example, that we make a special point of doing things to tire her out and wear her down or whatever, so that hopefully her life will be saved. No, it might, but here we're saying that in addition, no, we're saying something else, that if she learned Torah, and then she does end up drinking the Mei Soita, and she is in fact guilty of having been Mizana with the guy that her husband warned her against, and she survives it, she's going to know to herself, you know what, though, that doesn't mean the Mei Soita doesn't work, it means my schus helped me, but I know it's still coming eventually. But the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Eliezer says no. If a man teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if he's teaching her tiflus. Tiflus means like silliness, and even the tiflus has a degree of znus, of loose behavior in it. The Gemara will eventually explain what Rabbi Eliezer means by that. It seems that the original Girsa in the Mishnah was something like kolam alamedes bitei Torah melamda tiflus, and the Gemara is going to be bothered by that. The fact is, Torah is not tiflus. So the Gemara is going to end up explaining what it means. Basically, it has to do with the idea of noshim dait and kalos and other such things. It means that they may misapply what they learned. And in this connection, if we're mentioning tiflus, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, roitzi isha b'kavva tiflus mitisha kavna precious. The average woman would rather have a calf with tiflus, again with this the ability to be around with her husband and to be able to fool around and whatever and be able to be lighthearted, mitisha kavim of precious, more than having nine kavim of abstinence. So there's many other. The Gemara is going to eventually explain what Rabbi Yeshua means by this, but
give us a heads up. It sounds like very, very.
Okay, so what Rabbi Yeshua is saying is that, in other words, that as much as. In other words, you would think a person wants a person with nine kavim, meaning, in other words, a lot more hachava b'gashmius is a very good thing a person would want to have. But no, she would rather be able to have the intimacy with her husband, for example, which is one of the meanings of tiflus, even if it means living, even if it means a lower standard of living. So, for example, Tosfos gives an example. Let's say, for example, the Mishnah tells us in Ksubas, different depending on what job a man has, there's going to be a different frequency of oina with his wife. For example, you have a person who works in town, he is supposed to have an oina with his wife, he has to have special time available for her, for them to have relations once or twice a week, depending on the nature of the job he has. On the other hand, for example, he's a donkey driver, which is kind of the equivalent nowadays of like a truck driver, then he has to go, then it's only once a month. And if he's a camel driver, even less frequently than that. And if he's a sailor, even less frequently than that. So therefore, so now, let's say, for example, her husband has a job in town where he's not making very much money. Metaphorically, we would call that one cab. Now, let's say he's offered a job as a camel driver, as like a long-haul trucker, let's say. Now he has a chance to bring in a much higher salary, but he's going to be home much less often, and she'll have less time for intimacy with him. Rabbi Yeshua is saying she'd rather stick with the lower standard of living and have her husband around more often rather than having the higher standard of living, rather than having the nine cabin, and have to be separated from her husband more often.
Sounds like back then the logic was that there was the idea,
Abiga Chasinet. Yeah, the Gemara has the expression in a number of places, Tavla Mace of Tandu, Mala Mace of Amalu, that women would always say that it's better to be married than not. Yeah. She has a desire for her husband, right? The fact is, the way things were back then, it is also true that a single woman was a lot more vulnerable and generally wouldn't fare very well in the world without having a husband to protect her. But here we're saying that in addition, she also wants the intimacy, she wants the closeness. Whether we're talking about, you know, sometimes it's physical intimacy, sometimes some certain times of the month it's emotional intimacy, but it'd be that. As it may, she wants that with her husband, even if it means a lower standard of living. There's other points in it as well. Mark Shaw mentions a point later on once the Gemara starts dealing with this matter of Tisha Kavan or Precious. There's also an idea, for example, that Tosfos rather explains later on a different point as well. You have a case for that's also described in Ksubas, where for various reasons a husband and wife are living apart, and he arranges with a third party to supply her with food. So therefore, you have certain amounts that it describes in Ksubas over there, and then you also have a case of murdered or meredes, where for example he doesn't want to be around her, and then they're separated, and therefore so her Ksubah gets increased week by week, and nevertheless Tosfos makes the calculation that she'd rather be able to be with her husband more often. And not have that increase in the value of her ksuba, and not have those amounts that this third party has to supply her with food, rather than having more precious being separated from her husband. The point is that Rabbi Yeshua is saying, however we learn it, the point is here Rabbi Eliezer is saying that if a man teaches his daughter Torah, it's like teaching her tiflus. Rabbi Yeshua says, yeah, you see how much women want tiflus; they want this ability to be intimate with their husbands physically and emotionally, and they consider that even more important than their standard of living. So by the same token, then yeah, Rabbi Eliezer has a point that a woman is going to view the Torah that she learns in that light, and therefore that may cause her to not delve into it as fully as necessary, as much as it needs to be able to fully understand, to fully be able to develop the mentality that a person needs to from learning Torah, and therefore yeah, maybe it's best if she doesn't. Now she has to learn the practical halachas that are negayah to her, but in other words, to learn Torah lishma, to learn like the way men sit in the chodava over a piece of Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer, and apparently Rabbi Yeshua is saying not necessarily is that really so suitable for women.
She has no
chiyuv, and therefore, so.
Calling them superficial.
No, not we're calling them superficial. We're saying that women have different priorities than men do. So her priority is more the tiflus, which is, it's not a superficial thing. Tiflus means, in other words, intimacy with her husband is a very great thing. It's a very important thing, but it's a different kind of thing than men are looking for.
Pneumistic.
More pneumistic, more the many different ways of looking at it, but yeah. Now, as time went on, they had, famously, Sota Shneur 100 years ago started opening Beis Yaakovs for girls, and then Chof Chaim and other Gdolei Yisrael of that time very warmly recommended it, because already it's becoming a different time. Women, as it is, are being exposed a lot to the tiflos of the world, not like in earlier times where they're being mischanech by their mothers at home, and therefore there's really no choice but to counteract the tiflos of the world with the Chochmah of Torah.
Why is for a woman?
Because we're saying, in other words, that they have different agendas than men. Her agenda is more towards the concrete and towards the gashmiyistik. So rather than more to the abstract, we're saying like this. For example, the Tisha Kavan of Fishers is more of an abstract kind of thing. We'll have a better standard of living, but she wants more mice of a poil. In other words, but again, nowadays that women are so much in the wider world anyhow, then therefore it needs to be counteracted with they need to have a solid grounding in Torah in order to be able to navigate that, and therefore that's why in particular in the last 100-odd years is why it became a definite thing. It has to be that way. There's really no other choice, and that is the proper way that women do have a chinuch in many ways almost equal to that of the boys.
But my point is that I heard a very important statement that women do not want a shallow husband. They want someone who's a strong personality who can lead.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that go?
So that goes also. That, in other words, they understand that there needs to be somebody who has a because they need somebody who has the ability to lead. Who's going to be the mashpia and they're going to be the makabel. Yeah, that is the natural roles of men and women respectively. So she has the ability to be mashpia in her own way, but ultimately there has to be a v'huyim shabach. So yeah. The Gemara in the Mishnah continues. We'll talk about this more, Beis Hashem, in the next few days when we get more into this thing of Kav v'Tiflos and Tisha Kav and Precious. But the point is that, in other words, men and women, men's and women's agendas are different, and their mentality is different, and therefore what's suitable in terms of learning Torah for men is not necessarily suitable for women, and it's going to be understood by them differently, and it's understood and applied by them differently. So Hu Hayomer, Rabbi Yeshua went on to say, Chosid Shoite, a foolish chosid, and the Gemara is going to again give examples of all of these further on, the Rosha Orum, and a crafty Rosha, the Isha Prusha, and a woman who's Porush, or we just said that a woman would rather have Tiflus rather than Prishus, so a woman who like goes against her nature and acts in a way like a Porush, which the Gemara is going to end up saying, like she puts on an appearance of it, but whatever, Umakas Prushim, and the wounds of Prushim, which again the Gemara is going to explain what that means, Hare Elam, Mechale, or Mevale Ha'olam, such people wear out and then wear down and destroy the world, because they're doing the various things that they do. As the Gemara is going to end up explaining, are all things that cause society and that cause people's attachment to Yiddishkeit to break down, and that's no good. So the Gemara says, "V'heim omim hotziu avachola." When we said that they're all calling out once her face starts turning pale and whatever, they say, "Take her out of the azara." So the Gemara asks, "My timing. What's the reason? Is the reason to Dilma Mesa? Is the reason because she might die?" The question with that is, Lememra the Mes Osir Machna Leviya. Are you telling me that a dead body is not allowed to be in Machna Leviya? Now you have in the desert they had Machna Shechina, which is the chotzer of the Mishkan, Machna Leviya, which is the area around that where the Leviim camped, and Machna Yisrael, which is the area around that where the rest of the Shvatim camped. In Yerushalayim, the equivalents for that are Machna Shechina is the Ezras Yisrael and Ezras Kohanim, that whole rectangle within which is the Mizbeach and the Heichal and the rest of that. Machna Leviya is the rest of the Harabayis, including the Ezras Noshim, all the way up to Shaul Nikonor, and Machna Yisrael would be the rest of the city of Yerushalayim. So you're telling me that a dead body is not allowed in Machna Leviya, and therefore the concern is that she's going to die, and she's going to be metame the Azara, and that she's going to be metame the Ezras Noshim. No, V'hotanya, we learn in a Braisa. Tomei Mes mutu lichnes l'machna Leviya, likones l'machna Leviya. A Tomei Mes is allowed to go into Machna Leviya. The Lord Tomin Mes Bovad Omru, not only a Tomin Mes, they say, is allowed to, El Afilu Mes Atzma, even the dead body itself is allowed to be in Machna Leviyah. We learned previously about the whole thing with Moshe taking Yosef's bones and taking charge of them until they, as they're wandering through the desert. And when it says Imoy, it means Imoy b'mchitzasei. It means he has Yosef's bones with him in the mechitza. Where he's camped in Machna Leviyah, he has Yosef's coffin with him. So we see the mess himself is allowed in Machna Leviyah. Now, the Ezra Sinoshim, at least on a Doraisa level, it does have the status, therefore, that even a mess is allowed in it. So what's the concern? Now, a number of the Mefoshim point out over here that Midrabanan, there is a Takana Midrabanan from the times of Yehoshaphat that certain parts of the Hanabayis are off limits to Tmei Mes, in particular the Chayil and the Ezra's Noshim. Nowadays, by the way, when the commonplace thing that we know that you're not allowed to go into the Hanabayis is based on the idea, in principle, in theory, we're, even though we're all Tomei Mes, in theory there would be parts of the Hanabayis we'd be allowed to go into, but like we talked about previously, the problem is we don't know what those parts are, really, because all the rules were long since been broken down, and we don't really know where the Hanabayis proper ends, and the Chayil and the Azorah begin, and therefore we stay out of all of it altogether. But Midrabanan, you're not allowed to have a Tomei Mes in the Chayil and the Ezra's Noshim. However, for example, Tosfos Chantz points out, for one thing, that would be, so if a person, Tomei Mes can't go in there, but here we're talking about she's already in there, so therefore it's not such an urgency to get her out of there if she dies in there. Another point that some of the folks should make is, since it's only Midrabanan and there's no reason to be yelling out Hotziua, that kind of urgency would only be sufficient on Daraisa. Anyway. So what's the problem? So the answer is, Amar Abaya, Shema Tifres Nida. It's not that she might die. The problem is that she might become Nida, and a Nida is not allowed in the entire Machna Leviyah, in the entire Harabayas. So that's why they have to get her out of there as fast as possible. So I'm going to ask, Lemem Rebbe Biasusa Merafia? So you're telling me that the terror, that at least all of a sudden she, until now she wasn't afraid, and now all of a sudden, now here, you were saying before that, what if she turns pale because of fright? Well, here we're kind of dealing with that. Let's say now that she drank the water, and now that's it, the chips are down, and her face starts turning pale and whatever, so now she realizes, that's it, I'm a goner. So now we're saying that that might all of a sudden cause her to become a nidda. And the answer is Ain. Yes. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, that is Chalchal Amalka Moed, we find by Esther, when she's told the news by Mordechai about what Haman is plotting and the letters that he sent out and all, she was very distressed. And the expression, but Chalchal, a double expression, so the Gemara brings a couple of opinions in the Masechta Megillah, what it means. And one of them is, Va'omer Rav Shapir Sinidda. Rav says it means that all of a sudden she became a Nidda. So we see that a sudden fright like that can cause a woman to become a nida, and therefore that's why we want to get her out of there so that she doesn't actually become nida and be metame the area of the Ezra's Noshim and the Hanabais.
Ever was actually a case of where actually
happened. What, where the Sota actually died?
Stomach first and everything, because people knew about it, so obviously they were scared. So
right. So the closest that I can tell you is, that I know of offhand, is that the Medrash tells a story of a woman who is in fact guilty of Znus, and she's going to be drinking the Meis Sota, and she's afraid of it, because, yeah, what's going to happen? But she has an identical twin sister living in another town. To make a long story short, her sister goes and substitutes for her, and of course, since she wasn't guilty, then she sails through the whole thing. Then they come back together. The guilty sister is so overjoyed that her sister saved her life, they gave a kiss. And after that cause, then, now like this, you have almost like molecules of the Mei Sota still in her mouth, and then, yeah, boom. So that's offhand the only example I know of, but I suppose there might be others as well. I think it's in the section of the Sota over there. I'd have to look. Anyway. So the question is, the question is that in the Masechta Nida, we talk about, you have, for example, a woman who's hiding out, because of enemies or whatever, and the Mishnah describes over there that even when her vest comes, we're not necessarily concerned that she became Nida if it hadn't come by that time. We don't have to worry that maybe she actually became Nida and she didn't notice it or something, because the Mishnah says, Charoda Masalekas Domim, the terror causes the blood to go away. So therefore, what are you telling me over here? That because she's frightened, and that's going to cause her to become a nidya, it seems just the opposite. And the answer is, the Gemara says, the answer is that there's a difference between two types of fear. pachta tsamis. An ongoing fear causes the blood to stop. Biasusa, but a sudden fright like this, where all of a sudden, until now, she thought maybe she was going to get away with it, and now that's it. She drank, and now that's it. The jig is up. And the same thing with Esther, where all of a sudden she's getting news out of the blue over there that Haman is planning to exterminate the Jewish people. Rachman al-Tlan, mirafia, that causes things to loosen up, and that can cause her to become nida when otherwise she wouldn't have been. In Avodah, there's a mimer of the Tzemach Tzedek that talks about the idea. Therefore, so we have the expression that we always use of fearing Hashem, the expression, ha-charedim el dvore is the expression, people who tremble at Hashem's word. So therefore, we're talking about that kind of harada. So that helps, so that helps clean up and prevent a person from becoming tamei. The Rebbe expands on this actually in Rishimus and points out that thus we're saying, in other words, when a person feels a constant sense of yiras shemayim, then yeah, it makes it metaphorically less likely that they're going to become a nidah. Meaning, in other words, it helps prevent them from becoming tomei with the kind of tumma that a person otherwise, as a natural part of the human condition, a person is going to tend to end up in the clutches of the Yetzer Hara and become tomei. So the harada, constant feeling of that I'm in the presence of Hashem, will help keep that at bay, as opposed to, we're saying, biasusa, if it's all of a sudden a one-time flash, on the contrary, that's not going to have a long-term effect, and the person is still vulnerable to the Yetzer Hara, and therefore they can end up becoming, metaphorically, tomei tumas nida. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Dalad Ear. Everything we talked about yesterday about the Shoftim B'Shotrim, so that Rebbe talks about after all, even though we said the fact is everything in Torah, and that means in other words, Osid Lover, we said there won't need to be Shoftim, but after all, everything in Torah is eternal, so the Shoftim B'Shotrim Tidin L'Chav B'Chosh Arecha does have to be relevant Osid Lover as well. So then the Rebbe explains in the continuation of that Sicha, there will be Shoftim, but only the Mal Yusa. Namely, they won't have to be enforcing the rulings they're based in. Rather, their job will be to inform people there is a shofet, there is a judge over here, and to help people fulfill what the based in said. Not to have to force them to do it, but rather to help them do it. For example, let's say the Edom are coming for Kiddush HaChodesh, then the shofet will have the job of smoothing out the row of repaving and smoothing out the roads so that the Edom can come there more easily. Continuing on halachas of Yom Tov, sifting flour. If you buy flour and it was already sifted and now you want to re-sift it, so then you should either have a goy do it or do it with a shinui. For example, do it with the back of the sieve. The same thing, actually, the same thing would be as far as matzah meal, as in, we not matzah meal necessarily like you buy from a box, but the kind where you yourself crush the matzahs. The Alter Rebbe actually holds you can't do it at all, even with a shinui. If it wasn't sifted yet, which I don't know where you're going to find nowadays flour that wasn't sifted, then for sure you can only have, it would have to be a goy and a bit of a shinui. You can't do it normally at all. And if you have things fall into the flour, if you have things that fell into it, so then you're not allowed to take those out at all, even for example, let's say again, you have crushed matzah meal and you're going to take out the bigger pieces, then that also you can't do.